Hi, welcome to Holden Village. In the Creekside Room, today's speaker is Kathy Sorrells, and she will be speaking on the power of myth and ritual in our lives, asking the essential question. So let's listen in on Kathy.
We must imagine our way into myth as best we can, like actors in a play. If we are not prepared to make that effort, how can we ever fulfill our own role in the universal drama? And so for me, myth is an invitation to participate in the drama of my life and in the universal drama. And it has excited me for many years, but more recently I've gotten very enthusiastic about it. And wanted to really, I think, last night I was sitting around thinking, hello. What, come on around here if you want, Ellie. What was, hi.
Hi, sorry, Billy.
That's all right. Quite all right. More people have come, I'll have to introduce myself. I hadn't done that yet. I'm Kathy Sorrells. And for the last month, I've been here in the village working as a carpenter. And in another myth, in another story, I do training in diversity and multicultural education. And I was just beginning to say what sort of excites me about myth. And we had just read this quote on the board, if you all want to look at it. We must imagine our way into myth as best we can, like actors in a play. If we are not prepared to make that effort, how can we ever fulfill our own role in the universal drama? And I was thinking last night, really, what is my intention for this week? And it's really to share my enthusiasm about myth and ritual. And so we'll do that in a variety of different ways. But today, we're going to really be exploring what is myth and ritual about, and the title was The Essential Question. That was how it was written, but it's actually The Essential Questions. There isn't one. I figure there's many. So we're going to explore that in a variety of different ways. I feel like myth and ritual has really brought me closer to the mystery of life, and when I say that, it's not so much about the meaning of the mystery, but the experience of mystery in my life. And I'm very, as I said, enthused about that. And when I think about the word enthused, it means to bring the God into. And when we think about God, I went and looked up the word God today, and it's actually to draw out. So I'm enthused about the stories about God, because that's what myths are. They're stories about gods. And to bring the God into and to draw the God out of. And I started saying that, to bring the God into and to draw the God out of, over and over this morning. It's got a little bit of a ritual there. And I realized I was breathing with it. And it's like breathing in and out. So I had one thought, that we could sit here and breathe for the next hour.
I certainly hope we will.
I would suggest that we do that. But we'll do other things as well. But for me, myth and the study of myth and ritual is somewhat of a meditation. And so it's about breathing. So I just thought if we'd take five or six deep breaths. So let's see if we can imagine our way into myth. I wanted to start out, and Liz, actually, why don't we introduce ourselves? Some of you know each other, but not everybody.
I'm Al Miller from Houston, Texas.
I'm Lee Miller from
Houston.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ellie
Youngman from Holden, right now. Dave Link from Holden. Bobette Glad. Who is that? Glad. And Liz was in my class. I started to say that Liz was in my class last week, and so she got treated to a fair amount of poetry by Mary Oliver, but I'm going to start off again today with a poem by Mary Oliver. She's a poet from the United States, and this is from a book called White Pine. And the title of the poem is called Mockingbirds. This morning, two mockingbirds in the green field were spinning and tossing the white ribbons of their songs into the air. I had nothing better to do than listen. I mean this seriously. In Greece, a long time ago, an old couple opened their door to two strangers who were, it soon appeared, not men at all, but gods. It is my favorite story, how the old couple had almost given nothing, had almost nothing to give but their willingness to be attentive. And for this alone, the gods loved them and blessed them. When the gods rose out of their mortal bodies like a million particles of water from a fountain, the light swept into all the corners of the cottage. And the old couple, shaken with understanding, bowed down. But still they asked for nothing beyond the difficult life which they had already. And the gods smiled as they vanished, clapping their great wings. Wherever it was I was supposed to be this morning, whatever it was I said I would be doing, I was standing at the edge of the field. I was hurrying through my own soul, opening its dark doors. I was leaning out. I was listening. And for me, there's a lot in there about myth, but there's also an invitation again to open the doors to the gods in your life and to the stories about gods, which is what myth really is about. One of the other things I really like about Mary Oliver's poems is that she really asks us to be attentive. And the couple in here, that's what they had to offer, was their attention. And that's what I'm hoping we can offer each other during the next hour, is our attention. Myths are really stories. For me, they're stories about the spirit. It's the literature of the spirit, and it really tells us about the landscape of the soul. And so I think, as Mary Oliver is doing in the poem, as the strangers did in Greece, they stopped and attended to it. So, and I like the way she ends it by saying that she's leaning out and listening. And Liz, again, is familiar with this, but I have a ritual when I read poems that I read them twice, so I'm going to read it one more time for you. It's called The Mockingbirds. This morning, two mockingbirds in the green field were spinning and tossing the white ribbons of their songs into the air. I had nothing better to do than listen. I mean that seriously. In Greece, a long time ago, an old couple opened their door to two strangers who were, it soon appeared, not men at all, but gods. It is my favorite story, how the old couple had almost nothing to give but their willingness to be attentive. And for this alone, the gods loved them and blessed them. When the gods rose out of their mortal bodies like a million particles of water from a fountain, the light swept into all the corners of the cottage, and the old couple, shaken with understanding, bowed down. But still, they asked for nothing beyond the difficult life which they had already. And the gods smiled as they vanished, clapping their great wings. Wherever it was I was supposed to be this morning, whatever it was I said I would be doing, I was standing at the edge of the field. I was hurrying through my own soul, opening its dark doors. I was leaning out. I was listening. Thank you, Mary. Does anybody have a comment on that before we move into exercise? Anything it triggered for you?
About what triggered for me was that they understood can't remember how she said it, but they comprehended in their terror, you know, as this was happening, they understood. That's something that kind of caught my eye.
Even in their fear, they were able to understand.
Right. And that they asked for nothing more. Because there's a lot of this about people asking for gifts. And I go, they didn't ask for anything else.
Before we get into today's, I just want to give you an overview of the week. Today, we are talking about the essential questions. Tomorrow, what I'm hoping to do is to talk a little bit about and work a little bit on fear and resistance. These are themes that I feel like are dealt with in myth frequently and are also themes because of they're dealt with in myth, they're dealt with in our lives, and that I would like to cover. So tomorrow, we're going to move back and forth between myth and ritual. The two kind of are woven together, but maybe a stronger focus one day on myth and then on ritual. And so tomorrow, we're going to be dealing more with fear and resistance. The Wednesday on death and rebirth, and we're going to actually be, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the myth of Demeter and Persephone. It's a Greek myth that's wonderful. About going down into the underworld and coming back up, and it really explains and tells us a lot about our lives. And on Thursday, we're going to focus on creation, and we're going to actually create in the class. We're going to do some creation, so it will be a ritual around creation as well as discussion around it. And the last day is on myth and ritual together, and the focus will be on celebration. And I have some notions about what that'll be, but it'll also evolve from this week. Since our theme is a foretaste of the feast to come, we may involve that part in it as well. But right now I want to involve you all and do something that's somewhat like classroom research and discussion. But it's an exercise that has many names, and we won't name it today. But what I want you to do right now is just stand up and find somebody, a partner. So find somebody to talk to. And then I'll give you a explanation of what we're going to talk about. So what you want to do is first introduce yourself if you don't know the other person. Preferably somebody, mix up. We're going to do this of various times, so you're going to find people you know, people that you don't know.
Well, that will be a three, I guess, a try.
Oh, three's fine, yeah. Okay, I'm going to give you a question. And what I'd like you to do is have one person in the triad or the dyad to talk about the answer to that question. And then I'm going to ring the bell, and I want you to not switch people, but just switch and have the other person talk. So the first one person will be talking and the other one listening. When I ring it, then the other one will talk and the other person will listen. And then at the end of that, we'll just take a couple minutes with these questions. I'll ring the bell again, and I want you to find another person to talk about another question with. And the first question is for you to think about a movie that's your favorite movie, the best movie. Often those movies that are our favorite movies do have mythic themes in them, or we say it was of mythic proportion. But just whatever your favorite movie was. It could have been, Donald Duck. Donald Duck has some pretty amazing mythic themes in it, if you are to look at them carefully. Partially what we're doing, myth is in our lives everywhere. It's not simply in the esoteric books of the past. It's in our lives right now. So thinking about your favorite movie from, like I said, it could have been Lassie, it could be anything. Talk a little bit about the movie. Describe what happens. Why did you like it? What was so great about it? Okay, if you'll find another person. And I'm going to give you another question. Someone that you haven't talked with yet.
No. I'm out.
You can come to find where you live on this somewhere.
Where?
Austria.
Austria.
And I lived over here in La Rochelle right there.
The people in the tape industry hate me. She comes in and she says, where are you going to be standing? And I said, well, all over.
I don't think any syrup would be real high sales unless I brought it over and let it listen to me. But the next question is to think about a story, your favorite story. And it could be a childhood story, one that you heard over and over. I know the three bears. I don't know what this three thing was in my family. But was a big one. Pardon?
Trinitarian.
Yeah, I guess. We're Presbyterian. But, you know, anyway, it is the Trinity. I did have two sisters. But to think of a story that was really important to you. And maybe it's one you read now again. I know another one for me is To Kill a Mockingbird. And I read it almost every two or three years. It's one of my favorite stories. So think about the story. Maybe describe it if the other person doesn't know the story. Think, describe it to them. And then what's important about it? What did you learn from that story?
There are a lot of people that are out
there. You can learn something just about anybody.
We can gather again around the circle. Thank you all for participating. One of the dangers is that I can't get everybody to come back. Much rather talk to each other. What I want to do now is just kind of see what we can summarize from our experience there. Thinking about our first question was about movies, a movie that you really liked, and then the third question was about a story that was really meaningful to you or something that was something you remember. And for me, those are myths. The ones you really remember. They touched a chord. They resonated with you. In some way, there was a mythic theme there. Myths come in all different forms. They don't just come in written forms that are in a library somewhere. So I think our lives are filled with myths through movies and stories. What was so special about the story or the movie? What did it do for you? I'm going to write it down up here, because we're talking about stories here, but
well, it's like all great literature, I think it touches your emotions as well as your mind. Connects with the human spirit or something, or your own sense of values or self.
Mm-hmm. For me, there were things that I could really escape into, but I really felt like I was there experiencing that.
Escaped into, and that you felt really there, really present, really.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I was watching a movie or reading a book. I felt like I was experiencing. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Absorbed experience. I like that. Anybody else? There's this great book by Donald Hall, and it's called Life Work, and I recommend it for anyone who's anywhere in their life, thinking about their life and their life and their work in their life. But he's got a great word, he calls it absorbedness.
But if you're about to retire, you don't have to read it, right?
Well, that's what's so special about it, because he's talking about life work, which goes on all your life.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, you can't get out of this. Of course, you can retire from life work, but what he calls absorbedness. And he asked the question, what is it in your life that really absorbs you? So that you are not aware of other things. And that's what his life, he's a writer. But back to the stories. There was something about the story or that absorbed you, that it was an experience. That's great.
The ones that stick to me are the ones that remind me of things that I think are important that I want to be reminded of so that I live that out more.
So they're lessons.
Yeah.
Other things about the myths? I couldn't help it over here, but Ellie, I think your first one was West Side Story.
Oh.
And you said that, and I loved what you said, the first thing was that you liked the dancing. Is that right? You said something like singing in it. So it was almost just the life.
The energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other things that these stories provoked or evoked in you and did for you.
do for me?
Well, I don't know if it fits in with, well, I'm a mess, I guess it does. It probably fits in with emotions, mind, and spirit, but I think they're encouraging. The ones.
Uplifting or encouraging?
I think with mine, it's sort of an incarnation of a longing. I mean, it's sort of that longing that hasn't got words to it becomes incarnated. And, you know, for me, it was Heidi. And so, I mean, there's something in it that touched a note of longing in me.
Identify with the
characters. Well, it wasn't so much identifying with, it was like they were acting out a longing that I had.
Again, remember the word God means to draw out, and myths are stories about God. So they're stories about what draws you out. And it sounds like that your story of Heidi drew out, maybe not even something that you will ever. A friend of mine really likes the movie Sophie's Choice, and she likes the movie for a number of reasons, but one of them is that she would love to go out, I don't know if you're familiar with that movie, but she would love to go out and get dressed like they did and just have a wild, crazy time. I'm not sure she'll do that, but something about the movie draws that out, or that need for that, and it sounds like maybe Heidi did that or does that.
It's like part of the land, stuff spoke. It wasn't like I was one of the people, but, you know, that the grandfather spoke, you know, Heidi spoke, the high country spoke, the going down the hill spoke, the Christ-like figure of her to the invalid companion spoke. You know, it was like I wasn't one person in it, but it was like an acting out of a longing.
It speaks to you.
Yeah.
Also, as you spoke then, it made me think of the idea that myth is really a public dream. We have our own dreams every night, some of them we attend to, some of them we would rather not. But myth is really the public dream. It's in a public domain, so it's shared. It's a community dream. At least a notion for you to think about there. Other things up here. There's a lot of research and study on myths and ritual and stuff, but primarily there's the sense of that myths do four things, and you all covered all of them completely. The first one is actually one of the ones that I love the most, but that it draws out the mystical. It relates us to the mystical experience in our life. It speaks to us. It's an incarnation of longing. The energy in life, the dancing, it's that myths can help bridge us and connect us with that which is mystical, that is mysterious, that is the mystery in life. And whether you read them or you watch them on the film, in a movie theater, or you watch them in the lives of the people that you know, they connect us with the mystery of life. So that's one thing that myths do. Another thing is that they're cosmological. You know, they kind of tell us what's going on. They give us a sense of where we are. Myths often are about different passages in our lives. So it's a map of the territory. It really helps us understand where we are. Whether it's in Heidi as sort of an adolescent change time, or some of the other movies that I overheard people saying. But they're maps of the territory, of life, of the human life territory. So they're cosmological, and I mean that in the broadest sense. It tells us, like creation myths, where we've come from. The third thing that generally people think of myths is doing is they're sociological. So they help us understand within our culture how we do things, what to do, how to act. And the fourth thing is that they're pedagogical, or they're teaching. They teach us lessons. And I think that the way that myth actually is kind of having a hard time right now is in the middle two. They're not doing a lot for us sociologically. And I think that there's a lot of potential still for them to do that in terms of cosmology, but we don't look at them that way. The cosmology in the Bible is not very connected to where we are right now. However, I'll just put out for you the myths. Some of the current myths are like chaos theory. Mm-hmm. That's a myth.
What was the first one again? I forgot the first one.
The first one was mystical.
Mystical.
Yeah, mystical, cosmological, sociological, and pedagogical. Gogical. Mm-hmm. All those cuckolds. All those things.
What did you just say, chaos myth?
A chaos theory is a current myth. A lot of people say we don't have any myths anymore. But societies and people don't function without myths. We do have myths. We definitely have myths. Want to think about ritual now. Back to the, I ask you one question about a ritual from your childhood. And then one question about a current ritual. So the same kind of question, how does ritual function? What does it do for you? Or what have they done for you? And potentially nothing. But that's what we'll be talking about. But what are some of the rituals? I'll just skip this.
We were talking about some Christmas things that, you know, always happen at Christmas that were good.
Mm-hmm. That you can anticipate it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Continuity.
Mm-hmm. Something very interesting about that, which is It's the continuity and the structure and the regularity of it, something that we do over and over and over and repeatedly, that somehow lets us go into it so other things can come up. So it's because we do it the same way every time that then the mystery and other things can become a part of it. I think if you practice any kind of a daily practice, a daily ritual, you recognize that as well. So it's almost, ritual is somewhat paradoxical. If we think about ritual as being something that happens every year or every day or every month, and it is very regular and very structured, but because of that, then the unstructured can come in because we do the structure. Other things under ritual and what ritual can or has done for you, potentially.
Well, it's not always positive.
Right.
So it can get boring.
Because it's routine?
Or even
create problems.
Or even harmful. A father may have the ritual of spanking his kids whenever they misbehave. That's a ritual, and that's certainly not positive. So it could be, you know, they could be negative rituals, I guess. Or does ritual bring with it a positive definition?
Not necessarily. I mean, our hope is that they would be positive in the ones that you interact with daily.
Well, it conserves energy and would also, I think, prevents exploration.
Because there was some sameness to it. We could go much deeper into it. And so now when we dance, this is totally different from dancing with other people because we're into this rhythm together. Mm-hmm. It's so much different.
But you were expending more energy when you were before you got to this rhythm.
Right. The ritual, doing it every Saturday night, took a long time to get there.
But somehow that doing of it every Saturday night allowed you to conserve energy, and so that's free to evolve in other ways. Yeah. Well, again, ritual has traditionally and contemporarily had a lot of different purposes, but the first one that somebody said was belonging. Was that you, Liz? And that's pretty much kind of commonly accepted as is for relating, for relationships, for understanding my position and my place among other people, and my place in the world. So relating myself to the world, relating myself to other people. And transitions is another one. Another purpose is to help us through transitions, rites of passages. Certainly one that is sort of inherent in a few things that are up there, but is healing. Rituals are offered for healing. One of the purposes of them. I think also for helping us make meaning. The first one when we talked about myth was about the mystical, and rituals are about enacting the myth. So in some way it's about enacting, bringing the mystical into our lives. That's certainly one of the intentions of rituals like the Eucharist, is to bring the mystery into our lives. And celebrating. Rituals are really about celebration as well, or they can be. Can you think of rituals in your life that are about celebrating?
Birthday cake.
Yeah, absolutely. Any others?
Candles at dinner. We have candles at dinner each night. That's the celebration.
Mm.
That's a special meal. Mm-hmm. In our house. Mm-hmm.
One thought.
Dress up to. Sometimes rituals, you can dress for them. I mean, it makes it special.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're dressing up for a birthday party or dressing up for Eucharist or you put out something special to do the dance.
Essentially, both your last comments are really what it's about. It's about somehow ritual is about making something sacred. It's separating it from ordinary time and making it sort of extraordinary time. Having candles, dressing up, shifting your consciousness. That's what ritual is about, is shifting your consciousness into a place of attention. And so when I originally said that you could actually eat a meal and any of your meals could be rituals, if your attention is on it being a ritual and on being completely present. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Thich Nhat Hanh, but he's a Buddhist, and he talks about, and I think it's actually fairly appropriate for Holden, because he talks about washing dishes and having that certain sense of
attention through that.
While washing the dishes, one should only be washing the dishes, which means that while washing the dishes, one should be completely aware of the fact that one is washing the dishes. At first glance, that might seem a little silly. Why put so much stress on a simple thing? But that's precisely the point. The fact that I am standing there and washing these bowls is a wondrous reality. I'm being completely myself, following my breath, conscious of my presence, and conscious of my thoughts and actions. If, while washing the dishes, we think only of the cup of tea that awaits us, thus hurrying to get the dishes out of the way as if they were a nuisance, we are not alive during the time we are washing the dishes. If we can't wash the dishes, the chances are we won't be able to drink our tea either. While drinking the cup of tea, we will only be thinking of other things, barely aware of the cup in our hands. Thus, we are sucked away into the future, and we are incapable of actually living 1 minute of life. So for me, in many ways, ritual is about being present.
and that you can ritualize anything if you make that part of your life special and sacred and bring a certain attention to it. But we can overdo it. One last story for you before we go. I just love this. It's about ritual. Let's see if I can find it. It's Hindu. Excuse me, but this is sort of in the way. When the guru sat down to worship each evening, the ashram cat would get in the way and distract the worshipers. So he ordered that the cat be tied during evening worship. After the guru died, the cat continued to be tied during evening worship. And when the cat expired, another cat was brought to the ashram so that it could be duly tied during evening worship. Centuries later, learned treatises and treaties were written by the guru's scholarly disciples on the liturgical significance of tying up a cat while worship is performed. So in our rituals, we want to attend to them, but also have a lightness about our attention, because who knows where they came from.